Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another episode of Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, getting off of a recent head cold. I don't know if you can tell. Joining me, as always, The Athletic's Matt Gelb, who also has a bit of a scratch in the throat. And it's not like we really rely on our voices for this sort of endeavor or anything. So thank you for your patience as you bear with us in our slightly altered vocal states.
This is Matt, why I write.
We have voices for newspapers. Matt, hello. How are you?
I'm good. I'm about to, after we take this ball, I'm going to take a little drive up to Queens.
Yeah, that's right. The Phillies
are weird home and home.
Yeah, kicking off a little home and home. Two games in New York, two games back home against the Mets, thanks to this London series coming up later in the summer. We are reaching out to all of you again today on the back of another winning week for the Phillies. They went 4-2 in the six games they played. My goodness, since we last talked, they won a series against the Marlins. They split a series against the Blue Jays, a quick little two-gamer, and they finished off a sweep of the Giants at the very front end of that.
Still haven't lost a series since the second series of the year.
Nope. They're on a bit of a heater that way, which is all you can really ask for. You know, if you win or split every series, I think you end up winning somewhere around like 98 to 100 something games spread out over 162. So that's good. You win these series, even though they didn't sweep the Marlins, who are just not a very good baseball team. With Zach Wheeler on the mound on Sunday, it was kind of a weird game. The Phillies still look great. They're 28-13. They are up two games in the National League East. They still have, as of this moment anyway, the best record in baseball. Although that grip may be a little bit tenuous coming into this week as the Phillies start to face a little bit more real competition. They have the Mets for these four games, like we were talking about, and the Washington Nationals are no pushover. They will come into Philadelphia this weekend. Matt, I think the uptick in competition plus a little bit of injury and depth considerations this week may prove to be a bit more of a challenge than I think the Marlins or Giants or maybe even the Blue Jays would necessarily present.
I don't even know if it's the uptick in competition, but I think more than anything, it's always about, you know, your own team, right? And like what is going on with your team. And right now they're banged up.
Yeah.
You know, the pitching is mostly intact, and like you're still going to have, you know, you have Sanchez and Nolan and Suarez in the first three against the Mets, and you like your chances in all three of those games. They're facing another lefty on Monday night. Sean Manaea is pitching. That'll be four lefties in a row, right? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
And so, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, whether JT Realmuto and or Kyle Schwarber are playing Monday night at Citi Field. And if they are, that's a big boost. If they're not, it's going to just make it even a little more challenging. But I do think it's been interesting to see other guys really step up, Paul. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, it was against lesser competition, no doubt. But I think more than the last three games, I mean, you've seen over a greater stretch, like, for example, Bryson Stott, who I wrote a little bit about in The Athletic today. And like, this is the guy, I think this is the version of the guy that we thought, you know, would take the next leap forward, right? It's a guy who's mixing good on base skills with good slugging characteristics. I noted this in my story. He's already got 19 walks this year. He didn't get his 19th walk last year until July 15th.
Whoa.
Which is crazy. And he has doubled he's doubled his walk rate. And again, you're not looking for the guy to be totally passive, because he is, you know, really good at, you know, putting the ball in play. But he was so batting average dependent last year, right? I mean, his on-base percentage was really tied to his batting average, and he hit over 300 for most of the year, and it made it work. And then he did fall off at the end, and I think finished with a 280 batting average and, you know, an on-base percentage in the low threes. And right now his on-base is 100 points more than his batting average, which is like the platonic ideal, right, Paul? Of,
yes, it is. Hitter.
And so he's 270, 370, 426 right now. He's got 796 OPS. I think he's raised his OPS by about 230 points in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's all.
That's pretty good. That's not bad. You know, 10 steals, 19 walks right now. This is the guy they thought was taking the next leap. And I will say, I think it's interesting how he's been handled, right? They faced 16 lefties. He has started against 8 of them. And every time I ask Rob Thompson about Stott, it's like, well, he's a guy. He is an everyday guy for us. I think because of the way he started this year, it just kind of left the door open or jar for Thompson to use some of his righty reserves where Stott would normally play. I think that's out the window now. Like, I think Stott will be playing tonight. I think Stott is pretty much playing against every lefty for the most part. Not every single one. Maybe he gets a day here or there, but I think he's a guy now. Like, he's back to that guy. He's found a rhythm. He's going to be in the lineup just about every day, I think.
Yeah, well, you look at his last 2 weeks. You mentioned the raise in the season OPS, and it's easy to bump things up when you're still, you know, only a month and a half in. But he's been the team's best hitter the last 2 weeks. You know, you can just pull that out. He's walked 11 times against 6 strikeouts in his last 10 games. I mean, he hasn't hit a home run, but like you said, he's got that double swing back. He's got that gap thing going on.
Yeah.
And more than that, he's stealing bases really effectively too. Like, in the absence of Turner now, he's picked up, you know, the slack as the guy who is apparently the capital B base stealing threat, if that's one word, capital B, capital S, depending on your style guide. He's got, you know, 6 steals over the last 2 weeks. He's had a great, great stretch. It was a little odd to see him get off to as slow a start as he did. You know, the one thing I kept falling back on with Stott as it developed is because he was so good in 2 strike counts and had developed that reputation as a guy who would really just kind of wage war and hunker down when a count got to 2 strikes, that he would sort of insulate himself from really bad struggles, you know, that he would prevent himself from getting really lost in a quagmire of, you know, getting buried early in counts and striking out and maybe getting a little frustrated, because he seemed to bounce back so well. And now we're seeing a little bit more of that in the last 2 weeks, you know, cut down on the strikeouts again, only those 6 strikeouts in his last 10 games. That's 43 plate appearances. And it's nice to see that he'll settle back into, you know, more regular playing time also against lefties.
Don't you think?
Of course. And I would.
And I get why he wasn't playing every day, you know, all against all lefties early on.
I do too. And I think the thing that, you know, it's a complicating factor, but Kyle Schwarber's availability, I think, is still going to leave the door open for Whit Merrifield to work his way in. I know he's also seen time at third base. The game on Sunday was a very interesting kind of mishmash of, you know, starting guys at different positions and moving them around as the game went on. It felt very midsummer in that way. One of those games in like early August, you just kind of forget about where guys are shifting all over the diamond. And but the Phillies are going to need to do more of that to make this work while some of these key guys are potentially unavailable.
Yeah. Before I get to that, one more Stott thing. When you said about how he's so good with two strikes, it should insulate him. Well, what is the best way to insulate yourself from prolonged slumps, or at least to help yourself when you're not necessarily swinging the bat you want the way you want to swing it? Draw walks, draw just another 1 or 2 walks a week. Mm-hmm. And it prevents you from totally cratering. And I think right now we're seeing a guy who's really locked in. He was making a lot of loud outs early in the season and actually like getting a lot of weak hits. It was very weird. He was hitting the ball harder, making outs, than he was when he got hits. It was strange. But I think it's all evened out. And of course the picture of Bryson Stott is likely somewhere between, the dismal first, 3 weeks and the really good last 2.5 weeks. And that picture is of a very productive player. So, in reference to like it being a weird game Sunday, it's funny because I thought of something that Bryce Harper always says, and it's that when they get the first two games of a series, a 3-game series, they win the first two, and he'll always talk about that third game being like a bonus game, right? Because you the goal is to win series,
yep.
But whenever you get a chance, a bonus chance to sweep a series, like, you know, what a great opportunity. And the Phillies have already swept 4 series this year. I think I have that right. That's why they have the record they have. I mean, they've taken advantage of those bonus opportunities. They couldn't do it against the Marlins with Zach Wheeler on the mound. Disappointing, by the worst start we've seen by a Phillies pitcher all year, right? I mean, that was not great. I mean, he was all over the place. Like, he was throwing a little harder, I thought. Just did not have the kind of command that we're used to seeing Zach Wheeler have, and willing to chalk it up to one, just not good outing. His next outing will be against the Nationals on Friday at home. And, he's even in those stretch where he was, giving up one hit a start, and he was facing, I think it was like the White Sox and then the Reds, and then the Angels. He did not have his best command in those.
He wasn't happy. Right. I remember that.
No. And like the results were generally there. I think he's been fighting a few things of late, not injury wise or anything. I just think he's just been like kind of feeling his way through it. So I know he hasn't been very thrilled with his work, even if often the results have been there. So it's just something to watch. You'd like to see him come out of a start and feel good about it. And I think he felt decent about the last one against the Giants. He was using his fastball more than anything. He had pretty good command of it. Did not have that against the Marlins. And so, kind of something to monitor. But I was curious, Paul, like what you thought about, two reserves who have been getting more chances over the weekend and of late.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys, Edmundo Sosa and Christian Pache, and kind of both where they fit. Maybe Pache specifically, like where he fits in the bigger picture. Yeah. But first, I guess Sosa, who is walking, he's just clowning us now because he's got 6 walks this year, which is 6 walks and 51 plate appearances last year.
It's almost a career high. Yeah.
8 and 300 last year. He's hitting for power. He's playing a decent shortstop. Like, he has done nothing in my mind to prevent more playing time, right? I mean, we kind of went in this thinking, oh, it's going to be Stott at short and Merrifield at second. They're going to give Sosa a week here to see what he can do, and that week has been quite good.
Yeah. And by the way, at Sosa's career high in walks is actually 17, so he's got a little ways to go yet to reach that mark again. But yes, he is clowning us thoroughly. He cleared the bar on our over-unders for his first walk and then some. He's just racking them up. He's got a walk in, I think, 4 straight games. But this is not a guy you expect to do that. The strikeouts are still there because he's still very aggressive, which is, I think, what makes the walks that much more perplexing, surprising.
Yes. 4 straight games. He's hitting 318 with a 464 on base and 546 slug since Turner got hurt.
So look, first of all, excellent, perfect timing. Thank you, Edmundo. I do think we learned a little bit last year about what could happen when a guy with Sosa's profile gets, a lot of exposure. It is the flip side of that exposure definition, is that the book gets out and you get exploited when quality pitchers, know what to do against you. So I think that's something we're all going to be bracing for. Maybe something gets brought back down to earth a little bit here. But the fact of the matter is, right now, he has stepped in the absence of Trey Turner and helped, provide a little bit of stability in that lineup. Because I think what this could allow you to do is not move Bryson Stott over and not disrupt that. Look, we know Bryson Stott can play shortstop. He did it, all through his rookie year, and he's a good defender. And he's somebody who, if the need arises, you can play him there from time to time, again, while Trey is out. But if you don't have to rock the boat that way, if you don't have to remove a guy from a position where he is an elite defender and bring him back into, yeah, what you could call his natural position, but not really what he plays anymore, while also still getting, you know, capable defense at short and maybe ride a hot bat right now. Hey, I have absolutely no problem with this. I am a little confused by it in a good way. I didn't see this coming. I didn't really expect Edmundo to come out, you know, guns blazing like this. I thought once the book was out on him last year that his time as, you know, a very effective regular contributor might be near its end. And that's probably,
I mean, to his credit, he, you know, I mean, I think the scouting report, Paul, is that don't throw him a strike. And he has, in this last week, and it's just 1 week, shown better discipline. He is not chasing everything. He still swings a lot. The guy likes to swing. I think that's pretty clear. But he's making pitchers come to him now, get in the zone a little more because he's laying off some of those pitches.
So for now, I think what that lets you do is it keeps some of that stability, keeps Stott at second base. If you're playing Edmundo more regularly at shortstop, well, that's fantastic. And then while Kyle is dealing with, you know, his back, you still have the opportunity for Merrifield out there. You can, you know, flip flop, you know, Bohm has obviously skipped across the diamond. I think that does segue into the second guy you let in with, though, and that's Christian Pache, because he's another guy who's interesting to me because he has shown a little bit more discipline. Again, much in the way of Sosa, he's, you know, drawn a couple good walks when he hasn't gotten the base hits to fall. He doesn't have a home run yet. He's only got one double so far in the year. He's not really hitting for any sort of power just yet. But this is a guy who is still very, very clearly a good outfield defender. And if you have to live with him taking some reps in left field and sharing playing time with Merrifield or whatever the combination ends up being, the combinations have kind of multiplied now with the amount of flexibility these guys have between the outfield positions, with Merrifield going second, third, left field. Everything's kind of all over the place, so you can flip the lineup a number of different ways now. If you can work Pache in and you feel like you need to play him out there when, say, who's really inducing fly balls on this starting staff, though? I was about to say, you plug him
Taiwan?
In there.
Taiwan?
Maybe. But that's about it, right? Ranger obviously does not give up fly balls. Chris Sanchez is getting good ground ball rates. Maybe Nola a little
Nola's
bit.
Nola's a little more fly ball than he should be.
Yeah. You know, like maybe you could think of it that way when you bolster your, you know, your outfield.
Well, I'll
playing.
Say this. I mean, like, do you know what Brandon Marsh's numbers against lefties are right now?
They have fallen. He got off to a good start, but he's not looking great right now, right?
A 343 OPS. And again, just 34 plate appearances against lefties. But I mean, that is 500 points lower than what he does against righties. And and he has really tailed off. And also, he only played once over the weekend. And I think it's totally justified. Like, I know people get upset when he's not in a lineup and when Stott is not in a lineup against a lefty. But right now, I mean, it is difficult to play Brandon Marsh against a lefty starter.
Yeah. And it's a shame. You know, when he got off to such a good start, that was a small sample, of course, like everything is early in the season. But when he got off to that hot start against lefties, you're like, oh, okay, maybe he's finally going to push his way through and be, you know, more playable against lefties. But yeah, gosh, I didn't even realize it had been that bad lately. That's not great. And it's nice to have a right-handed complement to play against that, because right now, 343 OPS is just, that's not work. And a 50% strikeout rate, no thanks.
No, and my biggest thing is, like, with Pache, like, I don't know where he fits. Like, this is a great stretch here for him to get a little bit of run. I mean, he played all three games over the weekend in Miami. If I had to guess, and this is because I was not in Miami over the weekend, I'm just doing this from context clues. I'm going to guess that in the first game against the Mets at Citi Field, Schwarber does not play, and that they go with the hands team in the outfield on defense. And I don't think we've seen this. Have we seen this in the starting lineup yet, where they have Marsh in left, Rojas in center, and Pache in right? Even last year, I don't think we saw it in the end of the year, did we?
Pache in right? No, I feel like it's been a minute since we've seen that.
Okay. So I think that Castellanos DHs and that they do the hands team in the outfield. And so that Pache gets four starts in a row, all against lefties. I just, like, I don't know where he fits, because he is basically Rojas, same skill set, same profile. You know, do they go into, while Turner is out, do they go more of a platoon situation between Pache and Marsh in left field, and then let Merrifield roam around the infield when there's a lefty on the mound. I don't know. All I know is that Pache has barely played. And to his credit, you know, he got 5 hits over the weekend and 13 at-bats, 4 strikeouts, you know, gave him some decent at-bats, plays a good outfield, like you said, Paul. I think that eventually this is someone that they are going to be trading during the season. Mm. I do. I just don't know that he fits. There will probably be more of a desire. And I know Cody Clemens, ever since he had the Cody Clemens game, has had some pinch hit at bats that have not gone well. He's had some big at bats in big moments.
Yeah.
As a pinch hitter, and he has not produced. And that's hard. But
hard.
I do think come later this year, July, August, September, like I do think they'll want a true like lefty bat on the bench. And as long as you have Pache around, you're not going to have that. I don't know if it's Cody Clemens or not. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But a true lefty bat. And right now they can, because Turner is out and it just changed the roster configuration. But at some point, I wonder where he fits. I just don't know if they can carry him the whole year with Rojas. And Rojas, to me, has been just fine. Like, he's done, you know, he's been fine. I think his at-bats have been better. They've been fine.
Yeah, Rojas feels like he's doing the minimum, not the bare minimum, but the minimum of what he needs to do on offense to stay in the lineup. You know, he's had a couple of plays on defense where I think he's made it look closer than it could be with your average center fielder, where he hasn't made the play. I know I can think of like a couple where he's racing back and he just either gets a tip of his glove on it or he just misses it. But like, a normal guy doesn't even get close to those balls. And while you'd like to see him make those plays and really take a leap into being something extraordinary out there, I think what he's doing on offense is, or what he's doing on defense rather, justifies his place in the lineup so far. Do I want to see a little bit more? Yes, of course. I always want to see a little bit more from young guys. I want to see these guys take leaps and become more important players. But it's clear that he hasn't done enough on offense to warrant any sort of extraction.
Well, from right. Well, does that make you want to carry Pache the whole year? Like, are you still in that area, that sort of gray area where you're like, not sure about Rojas, want to make sure I still have Pache around?
I understand Christian's place on the roster right now. I'm not surprised, and I don't recoil when I hear you say that he looks like a trade candidate, because I think that's fair. You know, if you think about,
and I don't know that they'd get very much for him. Right,
no,
saying, like,
no.
Like, he, you know, he's the kind of guy where he's like, come July when you want to go get a lefty veteran bat for your bench, like he's the one who's in danger.
Right. And you know, you look at, you just, again, we're getting a little out in front of our skates here, but you think about a team that might just need somebody to play out in the outfield if they have a bunch of injuries. You know, the Giants right now, they just lost Jonghyun Lee for some time with a shoulder sprain, right? Like, if that happened closer to July, they'd probably be like, well, you know, Christian Pache can do this. I like his place on the roster right now as, you know, the 25th, 26th, you know, man, whatever you want
really
to place him at.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but he's barely played. I mean, what did he have? He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 starts before this weekend. He had 3 in a row here. I mean, he just has not played. He had taken 1 at bat in the previous 9 days before this weekend.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
And I think all of that goes to say that while I am content with him being there, I'm okay with it. It's tolerable. I am not going to lose a lot of sleep if they feel like there's a move they can make to make themselves better. Maybe they feel like that is Cody Clemens. And, you know, when people come back healthy, they feel like Merrifield has, you know, enough chops to handle left field when Marsh or even Schwarber on his occasional, you know, spell starts can't play out there. He's not being used that much. That is true. And I guess to put a bow on the thing you were talking about with right field, I just went back and looked this up. He appeared in right field earlier this year during the Giants game blowout on May 4th, but that was only for a couple innings. His last start was during postseason ramp up stuff at the end of last year. He started two games in late September out in right field.
Right, but did they have the hands outfield in those games? You know what I'm saying? Like the Marsh, Rojas, Pache outfield might be the best outfield line we've ever seen the Phillies have if they do end up going with that.
I'm just looking at this real quickly. No, Jake Cave was in the other corner on both of those games at the end of last year. So they haven't had this. At least I don't believe they have.
It's a pretty good outfield.
On paper, this should absolutely be an outfield that covers some ground and picks some balls. Yeah.
Oh, Marsh, sure. I think, you know, on the metrics, you know, and they are what they are 6-7 weeks into the year, Marsh is graded out as one of the best left fielders in baseball.
I think what always surprises me about Brandon out there is how good his arm is. I always seem to neglect that when accounting for him. I always think about outfielders first and foremost with range and routes and first step. And then I think about arm a little bit later, and it always catches me by surprise when he unleashes some of these throws. He's really got a good arm. Maybe it's just good because it's left field. I don't know, but like he really seems like he can throw the ball, and I've discounted that before, and I should probably stop doing that.
Do you want, I want to give you one of my favorite numbers moving on. I'm going to give you one of my favorite numbers.
I love right numbers. Now. What number is this?
Matt Strom's FIP right now is 0.01.
Oh, it's still above zero. Oh, I thought it went back down.
Well, he's got 27 strikeouts and one walk in 16 and a third innings. He struck out the side again on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Bullpen's been really good. And I know, like, there's going to be a lot of fixation on Gregory Soto. Honestly, they lost that game in the top of the 10th.
Yeah.
You got to score one run there. That's always the thing. I want to say it's almost tougher when you're the road team in those extra inning games, because there is a lot of pressure to get that one run in. Because if you do not score in the top half of the inning, I mean, you're really screwed. You're not going to win.
It almost feels like you need two. I go into that thinking you need two. So forget the one.
At least one.
The pressure is there.
Yeah. At least one. It's really interesting to me though, Paul, like the bullpen is just, they have barely had to use these guys, and it's trust me, great problem to have. I mean, because there will come a time, and maybe it's this week, where they really need to lean on some of their relievers. But you know, Wheeler only went four on Sunday, so they did need to count for, you know, five plus innings from the relievers yesterday. But Turnbull, I thought, was interesting that they got him hot, right, and he was probably going to pitch three innings, you know, but they came back and tied the game while he was warming up. So he's like, well, he got hot, so he's going to come in. And he only pitched an inning, and it was, you know, it was an okay inning. Like, he, you know, he was a little erratic, but, you know, it just shows, I mean, like, this whole thing is like kind of a trial and error. I mean, there's no real clean way to do it. I mean, once it was a tie game, they're like, well, we're not going to just, like, you know, pitch this guy until he's done. Like, we want to win this game. So he pitches right. one inning. Could they have sent him back out there? I guess they could have, but I understand why they didn't. You know, but really, you look at some of the usage of these guys, and it's not taxing. You know, they've had some injuries out there in Junior Marte and Luis Ortiz, but they've really, I think, found a way to get a good balance in the bullpen. I do think it's funny how Ryan Kirkering is like barely pitched leverage spots because there just haven't been a lot.
Yeah.
And yesterday he came into the game in the fifth inning and threw 7 pitches, I think, and got 3 outs. You know, I think there's a lot to like out there, especially Hoffman and Strom right now.
Yeah, I'll reinforce what I said last week. Jeff Hoffman being real is, yeah, I can't say enough about that. That's an incredible weapon to have. I did like that Strom yesterday, much like Ranger earlier in that Marlins series. I was keeping watch on this. Ranger allowed his first hitter to start 3-0 on him during his start against the Marlins this weekend. And Matt Strom just did the same on Sunday for the first time. Somebody started 3-0. Both times, it was Vidal Brujan, which I thought was interesting. And both times, Brujan eventually made an out. He grounded into a double play against Ranger, and then he eventually struck out against Strom. That's just one of those little Jason Starkish quirks of the game that I like paying attention to. Yeah, Strom's been amazing. Hoffman's been amazing. It's been nice to have that while Alvarado finds his way. He seems like he's just still not quite 100% with either his feel or whatever it is. He's been fine, but picking up for Sir Anthony, you know, Gregory Soto, I have a hard time faulting him.
He's really bad in low leverage spots.
And
yesterday wasn't a low leverage one, but it was like a, you know, I don't know that.
Like how mad
if he fields that ball. Yeah. Right. I mean, he could have fielded that ball. It was not hit. You know, he probably needs to make that play. Right. And at least knock it down. And then they have the bases loaded and nobody out. And at that point, they're still going to lose probably. So
It doesn't put you in a great spot. And like, again, yes, maybe I can pick at that a little bit, but at the end of it, it was a strange carom off of him that went just far enough into right field to get a run. Like, all right, that's fine. It was a game they never should have been in anyway. They were playing the B lineup. Zach Wheeler looked like he was, I don't think he was hurt, and it doesn't seem like he was hurt, but it was clearly he was fighting something, probably just feel. You know, he lacked finish on a lot of his pitches. A lot of them drifted out and away to his arm side, and that's usually that was a telltale with Nola, I think, when he was going bad last year, is you could see the finish kind of leave Knowles. You know, the sinker would run too far away and everything would just kind of finish high and away to the arm side when he's throwing to lefties. And you see that with Wheeler yesterday, and it's just like some of these were just not competitive pitches. And Wheeler, when he's not, you know, even when he's been fighting it these last couple of starts, when he's not been happy, the misses have been competitive, and the stuff is still so sharp.
I think the stuff has gotten sharper, and I think that is he has to make an adjustment, right? Oh. Like, he's throwing a little harder, and I think that has compromised some command. I think
the Chris Sanchez conundrum.
I guess back to Soto real quick. He's given up 7 of his 9 earned runs have been in,
Lelev.
Yeah, either with big leads. Actually, he gave up 2 on Friday night in an 8-0 game, and of course he had that 5-run outing that made things hairy in that one Rockies game. But I mean, this is kind of, you know, again, this is exactly what he was last year. It was like, you know, really, really, really good, is prone to blowups that make the numbers look really not great, and so that is that's where he's at. What's your bullpen hierarchy right now? Like, if you had to like rank your most trusted to least trusted.
This is a good exercise, and I think it segues into one last point that I have anyway. If I'm watching a game right now, I feel most confident every time Hoffman comes into the game. I know Strom has technically the better numbers and has looked a little bit more effective, I guess.
Yeah.
I see Jeff Hoffman come into a game, and I know whatever rally is happening is about to end. I just feel like he's riding so high right now. That slider is unbelievable, and he's my top guy at the moment. Even though we know that Peak Alvarado is better, Strom coming in after that, I know there's sort of like a weird calming presence about Matt Strom coming into a game lately for me, because you know, maybe it's the hair, you know, the gentle flow as he releases the ball. But because he is the rare guy in this bullpen without the capital S stuff, there's almost something soothing or nerve calming about seeing him come in and handle and you know, throw 92, 93 in the shadow of the plate and keep the and that slider is still fantastic and keep these guys off balance the way that he does. There's something I can't really quite explain it. It lacks the explosive potential of blowing somebody away, but also takes away a lot of the element of, well, he might not know where it's going if he just rears back and unleashes 101, you know? So I would probably put Strom number two. And then after that, Alvarado is, you know, he's still right there. Even when he's not 100%, he's knocking on the door. And that's a really good top three. And I think the segue there, and I'd be interested to hear if you agree with that top three after I make this point. The interesting thing there is, if you're looking ahead to moves that this team could make to improve its roster, if you start thinking ahead to the summer, start thinking ahead to June, July, maybe looking at a trade. If you assume health, which is tough to do, but let's assume health for this. Is it worth it to think about picking up a reliever who is significantly better than, say, any of the guys who would be fourth through eighth in this? You know, so we're talking about Soto, Dominguez, Kirk Ring. And at the moment, that's Jose Ruiz, but that could be different. Is it worth it? The acquisition cost, the players that it would take, the potential money that it would take if we're thinking about luxury tax things, to go over the top and pick up another arm for this set to really reinforce that? I go back and forth. I think no, but anyway, I'd be interested to hear in your bullpen hierarchy and whether you think that's a reasonable thought.
I agree with your top three. Are you saying you would want to go out and get a guy who would slot fourth there?
Yes and no, because this team has a really good set of bullpen arms right now. And if they're healthy, I feel good riding them into a playoff series. But we've seen how Rob Thompson likes to manage playoff games. We've seen how he likes to attack lineups. And if that continues this year, again, we have to say, assuming the Phillies make the playoffs, but if they make the playoffs, that it would be that much more beneficial to have yet another weapon back there, just the way this team uses its arms, to feel better about the guy who probably has to come into the sixth or the fifth inning multiple times throughout a playoff series. During the regular season, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because you just, if you have to give up a good asset to get a guy who's going to be, you know, fourth in your pecking order, or push somebody who's currently second or third down, is that a waste of resources? Because again, you just mentioned about how they've had difficulty getting Kirkring into leverage spots. If you can't get another big guy into, you know, spots to keep him fresh and ready for that stage, and is it worth it? It's an interesting philosophical thought exercise to me. I came up with it, so I'm a little biased, to think about, does it make sense to pick up another bullpen arm, knowing that for 2 months of the regular season, it may not make a ton of sense, but for the way this team approaches the playoffs, maybe it could.
I mean, yeah, to me, like, if I'm going out and looking for a bullpen arm in July, I'm looking for an impact guy.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a guy who I think can slot one or two. And I think those guys are going to be out there. Like, I was talking to somebody else about this, about how, you know, if you're shopping for a mid-rotation starter or a top-end starter at the trade deadline, you're probably screwed. If you're shopping for an impact bat, or, you know, somebody that can come in and be an everyday guy for you at the deadline, you're probably screwed. If you're shopping for a, you know, late inning right-handed reliever at the deadline, you know, that's a pretty good thing to be shopping for. You might have some options. Those guys are available. And the two that stick out right now to me, it's like, and there's going to be a lot of demand for this guy because he's very good and he's on a team that is probably going to be trading people, and that's Ryan Helsley, the Cardinals. Jordan Romano on the Blue Jays could be available. I've always liked him. Everyone's been talking about Mason Miller from Oakland. Don't think he'll be traded. And if he does, it's going to be for an insane amount of players. I'm interested in, like, what happens with Devin Williams. I know the Brewers are in first place right now. They've played really well. I think they're playing above their heads, and I'm wondering if they do come back down to Earth, whether they end up being sellers. They want to be sellers, I think.
Jeez.
But that's another conversation anyway. But I mean, he could be available. Devin Williams is interesting. And he's, you know, he's coming off a pretty serious injury, so you're not sure what the deal is there. Marlins have some guys. They're not right-handed, which probably gives me pause. I think I'd want a righty. You know, like Tanner Scott hasn't been great this year, but it, you know, was terrific last year. He's interesting to me. Anthony Bender on the Marlins, I'm interested in him, but he's not really, maybe he's not guy who slots one or two. That's more of a guy who slot fourth,
you know,
behind those other guys. Right. But this is a roundabout way of saying there could be some guys out there. And if that's where their biggest need is, right-handed relief, not a bad place to be shopping. And you're right. It's looking way, way down the line. I do think Kirk Green could, you know, could obviously be, you know, that guy for them. And I do think that they've done a good job of just kind of like easing him in here. They haven't needed him. He hasn't pitched on back-to-back days yet. That's good. You know, it's worth, you know, easing everybody in. I don't think that's the worst thing.
No, it is far from the worst thing. These
could be good. Some Astros righties available.
Yeah,
the Astros, you know, going to be sellers. Oh,
Ryan, man. Presley, maybe, like
Brian Abreu. Yeah, Ryan Presley. Yeah.
Well, Brian Abreu certainly fits the mold of, you know, give Caleb Cotham all the stuff guys you can and see what he can do.
He fits their type, right? He wouldn't be cheap. I mean, that's you know, yeah. And this is for later. I mean, it's a great conversation to have. It's how much are you willing to give up?
Yeah.
You know, for righty reliever, you know, late inning reliever.
And what can you give up?
Yeah. What can you give up? And, you know, what do you cash in? And if you really do think it's the one piece that, you know, makes this team, that gives this team a huge bump in championship probability, then might be worth it.
Might be. No, that's a good spot to be in and something to watch as the weeks and months go by. So that'll do it for this week. Again, the Phillies take on the Mets for four games on a two-game home-and-home this week before a weekend series with the Nationals. They still sit atop the NL East by two games over the Braves, four games in hand, even in the loss column.
That's crazy. They've played four more games than the Braves.
Four more games.
Austin Riley might be hurt. I mean, teams are going through injuries right now. I mean, the Braves have had a few relievers get banged up. You know, this is when you start to really tap into your depth here, and it's going to be a challenge.
It's a good time to pounce. Look, the National League is not good this year. It is not a good league, and there are a couple of good teams. The Dodgers are a good team. The Braves are still a good team. They're just dealing with injuries. Question marks about the Brewers, question marks about the Cubs, although the Cubs, I think, have better pitching. And then after that, I don't know. The Reds have underperformed. The Pirates have come back down to earth.
I'm really surprised at how poorly the Reds have played of late.
I am too. The Cardinals, Paul Goldschmidt disappearing. The
Cardinals,
I think,
are on the verge of being done.
You know, there are not a lot of good teams in the National League. There just aren't. And so if you're a team trying to capture one of these top spots in the NL, like I think the Phillies are now, I think you can set your sights on continuing to play for one of those bye spots, even though it's kind of cursed the Braves the last 2 years.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that.
I don't either. Then you keep going for that, right? And this is the time to pounce. Yes. There is no real schedule in the NL that is tough. We talk about, I'm prolonging the exit here. A lot of the focus around the Phillies has been their strength of schedule. And I agree, they've actually played some of the weaker parts of this relatively weak league. But they've been dominating them when they have, first of all, which helps cushion some of that. And I don't think you can look at this league and say there's really a punishing stretch of NL games. They have six games. The Braves to Dodgers in July, right? That's the one you're talking about? Yes. Yeah. Six games right there. And if they go 2-4 in those games, okay, fine. That's a small enough sample. You don't really care too much.
Yeah. But I mean, yes, you could add the Cubs in there too. They start July with three at Wrigley.
Okay. Yeah.
Three in Atlanta and then three at home against the Dodgers. And that's a good stretch. It's a good test.
So there you go. And then that is probably it. You can maybe think about then on the road on the West Coast, because weird things happen when they play the Dodgers and then the Diamondbacks.
End of July, they get nine in a row against Twins, Guardians, Yankees. Those are three decent American League teams.
Yeah. Okay. I'll meet you at decent. I think I am not swayed from my point that, and thank you for the counterfactuals. I'm not swayed. It's not a good league.
A lot of mediocrity, and yes, there are chances to really pad your win totals.
Yes, absolutely. And hopefully they continue to do that against a Mets team that could prove to be pesky. They proved pesky against Atlanta over the weekend, at least. So here we go. Time for some weirdness. We were a little light on Mets weirdness last year. I feel like we're due for a big old comeback and some weird crap.
The Mets were just bad last year. That's why.
Maybe that's what it was.
But usually when they're both bad is when you get the most weirdness, when both the Phillies and the Mets are bad.
Oh, boy. All right, anyway. Phillies Mets happening this week, then the Nationals over the weekend. More chances to hopefully maintain this lead in the National League East. Hopefully get a couple of the big boys back from injury. Hopefully Kyle and JT are doing okay. And hopefully the pitching stays intact, because right now that is the backbone of this team, keeping the ship afloat. Well, better than afloat. Hopefully just keep this engine running. It's a couple weeks in a row now, Matt, where you and I have just kind of had to sign off feeling pretty good about things, and hopefully that continues. So that'll do it. Finally, actually, this time. For Matt, go read his stuff at The Athletic. I am Paul. We'll catch you next week.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP439267V1.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards. Johnson Level has been an industry leader for over 75 years, offering the finest levels, lasers, and layout tools. The Johnson Level 85-foot laser distance measurer captures length, area, and volume, and it also can be used in dusty and rainy environments. View our selection of Johnson Level tools on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for many other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.